of information related to your clients or whatever, please be mindful of that. When I call your case name and the appellant's attorney comes up, I will need to repeat the case name before you start for purposes of the recording. All right, let's go ahead and get started. And the first case of the day is Putnam v. Sherbring. Again, the case is Putnam v. Sherbring. You may proceed.
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Herbert Friedman. I represent the appellants in this case. Paul Galder is also a party to this case, but he is unable to be because of physical limitations. It's me to do the argument. This is a motor vehicle collision that occurred back in December of 2008. Facts of the case are pretty clear. The defendant ran a red light, an intersection, collided with my client, Mr. Putnam. And from day one, he had complained about pains in his neck and headache and shoulders. Paul Galder filed this case in April of 2012. And I'm sorry Paul's not here because I wish he could hear what I'm going to say about him, because he is truly a lawyer's lawyer. Paul Galder is one of the best lawyers I've ever had the privilege of working with, and he's been practicing law in this state for 60 years. And he's been on the Judicial Nominating Commission for many years, just recently resigned because of health problems. But even the most brilliant lawyer, even the lawyer's lawyer, occasionally runs into a rough spot, and I think that's probably what happened with Paul in this particular case. Paul, as you may know, has been a domestic relations lawyer. And as the case moved along, things began to happen that probably shouldn't have happened. And one of the things that happened is that sometime in March of 2014, after this case had been on file for a couple, and by the way, a couple of continuances, we're not going to know. Paul was diagnosed with some heart problems, resulting in open heart surgery in November of 2014. At that point in time, he began to recognize that probably he needed some additional help. The person that he decided to have help him was me, which might not have been a very good choice, because in January 4th, 2015, I slipped and fell and broke my ankle. And I was pretty much out of pocket for a couple of months. Sometime during that period of time, the case had been scheduled for trial, and Mr. Galder filed a motion with the court for a continuance. And there's a date that I want you to be concerned with here that I think is important, and that is the new date of closing discovery in this case was September 15th, 2014. The case was kicked down the road to trial in June of 2015. That's about 9 months away. So when Mr. Galder brought me the file, I looked at it at home when I was recuperating, quite frankly, and entered my appearance in this case in a formal manner in the early part of February. And as I looked at the case, it appeared that there were some things that needed to be done. One of the things that was a problem was that when the deposition of Dr. Vinton, who was the principal treating physician, was taken by defendants, he limited his opinions to two opinions, and one of the opinions that he didn't list was that the medical bills were fair, reasonable, and necessary, and we're looking at about $106,000 with the medical bills in this case. This is not a small underbender. I looked at that, and I immediately asked the court to reopen discovery, so that we could at least get that opinion in and serve some additional discovery documents. I wanted to find out, for example, what the policy limits were, which is standard bill of fare in these kinds of cases. I wanted to get copies of the automobile photographs, which is pretty standard, and I wanted to add another witness, a witness who is a fact witness who worked with Mr. Putnam and who could see as an individual third party, not as a employee, not as a family member, but just as a person, how this affected him. Finally...
Can I stop you here for just a minute? Is the reason that you filed that motion at that time because you recognized that there were potential evidentiary issues?
Sure. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
I did. It came right out. I knew exactly where this was going to go, and there was an objection to it, and the judge simply refused to reopen discovery. I filed two motions, as a matter of fact. One in February and one in March of 2015. And so we proceeded on to trial, and the court simply refused to permit the opinion evidence that the $106,000 worth of medical bills were fair, reasonable, and necessitated by this injury. Case was tried to a jury, and we lost. We'd like the court simply to take another look at this. We think that the court erred in making a very rigid ruling, given the light of the fact that Mr. Galder, who has a very good reputation in this, was ill, and then he hired me, another ill lawyer, at least for a couple of months. Under those circumstances, we think that the court's ruling of prohibiting additional discovery in this thing was a bit arbitrary and very rigid. We don't think that there was any harm that could have been done to the defendants if somebody was permitted to say that the medical bills were fair, reasonable, and necessary. Instead, we have to go up to court and argue this case in front of a jury, and there's no medical bills in there, and they're looking, they're scratching their head, and they're kind of wondering what this is all about, and I understand that. That's why we wanted $106,000 worth of medical bills in this case.
Would it have been prejudicial at that point to allow Dr. Vitton's testimony?
Pardon?
Would it have been prejudicial to opposing party at that point?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that we offered to let them take another deposition if they wanted to, and I can't believe that that would have been anything that would have been a major issue. He could have still cross-examined him about everything else.
Hadn't defense counsel also had their own expert opine as to the reasonable and necessariness of the medical bills in that expert's deposition?
They would not let us take...
No, I mean Dr. Cradaville, the defense's expert.
That was another thing. I wanted to take his deposition. They wouldn't let me take that. And they never called him. Yeah, sure. We would have been happy to have him
Maybe
there.
I'm thinking of his report then and not a deposition where he does discuss the medical bills in his report.
Those were not admitted in evidence.
No, Dr. Cradaville.
No. He was an expert witness, and that would have been a hearsay issue, I think. I don't think they even offered them, quite frankly. Anyway, that's what I have to say, Your Honor. We'd like to have you take a look at this thing, and we'd ask you to send it back for another trial.
Mr. Friedman, before you step back, you confused me a little bit with your dates, so I just want to make sure that I'm clear on the dates. You were retained in September?
No. I wasn't retained really, and he didn't talk to me really until January of 2015 while I was recuperating.
And that was immediately when you then filed the motion to reopen discovery? Yeah. Okay. And trial was scheduled for the next June?
Yeah.
About 6 months later, 5 months later?
Yeah. I thought there was plenty of time. We didn't ask for a continuation of the trial. Just wanted some additional information.
Mr. Friedman, the court didn't preclude Dr. Vinton from testifying about the fair and reasonableness of his own medical bills.
No, he did not.
And did you offer those medical bills?
No, we did not. Those were relatively small amounts of bills. And in this practice, Your Honor, I guess we make a lot of guesses. And I perhaps guessed wrong, but I thought that it would diminish the value of the case if they thought there was only $700 worth of medical bills and they had all these other doctors there, when in fact that there was $106,000. It was a call that I made. I think I'd probably make the same call again. Further questions?
I do have one more question. The jury was instructed, though, that they could award pain and suffering?
No.
They were not.
Well, they were instructed they could award pain and suffering,
right.
But
they did not award pain and suffering, but they were.
And I don't have much time left, so apparently what I'm going to have to say, I got to say now. the facts of the case were very simple, that there was no controversial evidence that this man was not injured. The jury may not have believed him, all the things, and defense counsel is going to talk about that. But the reality of it is all the three health care providers who testified said they saw objective physical evidence that this man was injured and he was in pain. And I asked for a motion for a directed verdict, and it was denied. So, that's my story. Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Mark Laughlin with Fraser Stryker. I represent the defendant and appellee. Before I begin, I do want to say I agree with Mr. Friedman that Mr. Galter is an excellent attorney, gentleman, and I've known Mr. Friedman for over 2 years, lawyer, and we were both involved in starting Nebraska Appleseed, and he also excellent. This was not a gotcha. It wasn't a gotcha by either the court or myself. The court bent over backwards on numerous occasions to accommodate requests of the plaintiff and the plaintiff's attorneys. First of all, the original expert deadline in early 2014 was missed. I just want this court to know, I've been practicing law in Nebraska since 1991. I reached out to Mr. Galter and I said, hey, you know, we gotta miss deadline, we gotta get this thing moved, I'll help you do it, but we gotta get these experts. Deadlines. I gotta get your opinions. And then there were names disclosed, but no opinions. And again, I reached out to Mr. Galter and said, hey, you know, I gotta have the opinions. You know, I gotta have all of them. And I'm willing to move the deadlines and I'm willing to help you go to the court and move the Then we didn't have any opinions from Dr. Vinton. And I said, you know what? I'll just go take his deposition. You know, problem. And I went and I asked Dr. Vinton, this is in August of 2014, and I told Mr. Galter, look, I'll just presume, even though we're past the expert deadline by months already, whatever he testifies to in his deposition, I'm good with that.
Did you have an initial report from him?
No. Well, I don't believe so, Your Honor. I do not believe I did, because my memory is that's one of the main reasons that I went to depose him. Discovery ends in September. This trial was supposed to be tried in July, and I voluntarily agreed, and the court moved it and rescheduled to December. That was the second time. And then we got to December, and then Mr. Galter called me and says, hey, I'm going to have heart surgery. You know, we're going to have to move the trial. No problem. And the court moved it, no problem, to February. Then Mr. Galter called me, and thank goodness, you know, surgery generally went well. He had a good prognosis. He said, I'd like to get Mr. Friedman involved. I said, I know Mr. Friedman. That's great. I told Mr. Friedman, you need to take whatever time you need to get up to speed on the file. You know, should be able to go by February. He had a medical issue. And I said, you know, we can move it a little bit. But then, and this was the date I want the court to focus on, because it's a big deal for me, was January of 2015 when they came in and they said, we want to reopen discovery. We want to take new depositions, we want to serve new discovery, I want to designate new fact experts, I want to designate new medical experts, and one of the things, the key that I remember, and I do not recall, but I could be wrong, that the fair and reasonable and necessary came up in January, because what I can tell you is that the report that we got saying for the first time Dr. Vinton's going to testify on fair, reasonable, and necessary, that did not come until March 30, 2015, which again was very, I think that may have been the day before the pretrial or something, but it was, you know, it was 2 months before trial. That was a long time after this, or it was months before that this motion was made. But I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I could have tried this case in July, and I let that go. I could have tried this case in December, and I let that go. And now we've got a date. This is in January 2015. This third one is coming up in February. And now all of a sudden, I'm faced that this could be a brain injury case. I mean, this was going to turn into a brain injury case. That was what was going on. And I will tell you as a practitioner that I felt vulnerable, you know, that here it was. I mean, I'm trying to do the Nebraska way and, you know, be courteous and do things for the right way, for the right reasons. But You know, I'm sitting here thinking, boy, if I lose this one, you know, this is a game changer going forward in terms of what I can do, and for that matter, what the ethical rules require if I'm going to give people continuances, and it accrues hugely against my client that it turns into a brain injury case.
So if we could just set aside maybe the intentions of that they wanted to go in that direction.
Yes.
When was it you took Dr. Vinton's deposition?
That was August of 2014.
August, so that was before the discovery deadline?
Correct.
Okay. And I take it that neither you or opposing counsel then discussed fair, reasonable, and necessary as to the medical bills in that deposition?
We did not.
Right. Now, you heard me ask Mr. Friedman, your expert, Dr. Cradiville, correct, issued a report in June of 2014. Do you recall that report?
I recall that he did, yes. We did not call him at trial.
Okay. And in his report, though, he does refer to the medical bills and specifically opines that nothing after 2009 was related to the injury.
Yes, and you characterize your question on fairness and reasonableness. I think really what I recall of his report, and Your Honor, I did not reread that in preparation for this argument, but my memory of what he said is he reached maximum medical improvement at a certain time, and therefore no causation of the medical bills after that date.
But he would have had then before him at that time the medical bills?
Some of them.
At what point did you have all of the medical bills?
Your Honor, my memory is that I had most of them before discovery closed, but there was some percentage of them that, I mean, they were dribbling in here, even weeks before trial.
When you visited with the judge on your motion with regard to excluding Dr. Vinton's opinion testimony on fair and reasonable and necessary.
Yes.
Did he go through the factors set forth in Norquay regarding the factors that a judge should consider in excluding an expert's testimony because of discovery delays or?
He didn't say, well, here, I'm going to list the factors in Norquay and go over them one by one, but I think he absolutely did. And we've quoted at least some of his rationale in our brief.
Did he discuss whether there would be surprise?
I believe he did, because, of course, there was surprise. All of a sudden, we are sitting here now, and again, there was a couple of different hearings in the March, April, May timeframe, or June, leading up to the actual trial, and I kind of get confused as to what happened when, but, Judge, this is a month before trial-ish, 2 months, okay? And they come in here, and for the very first time, they say, here's $100,000 of medical that's fair, reasonable, and necessary. You're darn right. That is hugely surprising, and if there isn't anything more prejudicial than that, I don't know what is.
Wasn't the conversation more about, these are matters that are usually stipulated to, and you're not stipulating to fair, reasonable, and necessary, so I'm not going to force the issue. Isn't that kind of how the discussion went?
There was reference to that, and you know, this being recorded, I want to make sure that I'm careful here. You know, depending on how the court comes out, including if it's affirmed, but I have stipulated in the past to fairness and reasonableness, but I want this court to know that I mean, to the best that I could, I mean, I did have conversations with Mr. Galter, you know, that are not necessarily in the record. But what I can tell you is that I've been over backwards to get to change deadlines so he could meet them, to encourage him to consider to get whatever expert testimony he needed. And I can look you right in the eye and tell you that I have not lost a moment of sleep over that part of it.
Mr. Laughlin, when that motion to reopen discovery was filed in January of 2015,
yes.
Was the trial date at that point still February?
It was.
Okay, and I'm assuming that the reason then for your objection is, hey, we have trial in a month. No, I'm opposed to reopening discovery. I mean, was that the mindset?
Well, that was in part the mindset. It was in part was, yeah, I'm ready to go. I got Dr. Cradiville. We put in all this money. This is a 2008 accident. We put in all this money. Discovery's closed, we're ready to go, and as opposed to reopening discovery and basically starting all over with now a brain injury case, yes, I didn't want to start over. Surprise, prejudice, There, none more so. That's where I was. We're ready to go. Now, I didn't have a problem with the continuum. You know, I told Mr. Friedman, look, you take whatever time you need to get through the file, dig out. It wasn't so much. And by the way, the court, by the way, bent over backwards yet again and gave, I think, a 4 or 5 month continuance for that very purpose and for the medical. But you're darn right. I absolutely strongly opposed reopening discovery for brain injury or, for that matter, anything else.
Well, with regard to the medical bills,
yes.
Norquay says that the court should look at the reason for the delay. In this case, I think there were some legitimate reasons that have been already discussed. The importance of that testimony, surprise to the party, the time needed to prepare to meet the testimony from that expert, which you just got done saying. You had Dr. Cradaville ready to go, and he had already issued a report addressing the medical bill. So would there have really been a problem for you? I understand the brain injury piece separately, yes. But with regard to Dr. Vitton testifying about the medical bills, why would that have been problematic?
Well, 100%, because I didn't have any opinions to your whole point on fairness and reasonableness, and at least the necessity of the bills up to the MMI date in Dr. Cradaville's report. And more pointedly, Your Honor, you know, this court's opinion in Pope versus Gonzalez, you know, we had a pro se plaintiff who got 7 extra months, bent over backwards, the court bent over backwards as a pro se plaintiff, just like the court did in this case. And finally, the court said, I'm dismissing this case with prejudice. Because, and this court said that that district courts have inherent powers to compel conformity to Nebraska procedural practice. Those powers might well be used to bring litigation to a timely and orderly conclusion. I mean, if the courts can't do it after all this, you know, and do the balancing fact, this is an abuse of discretion standard, when can they do it? And I understand there's an emotive different reaction on fairness and reasonableness, and I also understand the basis of your stipulated question, okay? But, you know, at some point, you have to allow these district courts to exercise the discretion that they have, and they've got to be able to cut off these cases. And I'll tell you, I mean, again, even on fairness, this case should have been tried in July and December and February. And, you know, what's the message you're sending to the Mark Laughlins of the world about continuances if even when a court who knows what's going on and who knows the factors says, you know, this is the one time in 100, I'm going to take a step and say no, you know, problematic.
Thank you.
I apologize for going over.
No, that's right. I'm sure Mr. Friedman will appreciate it because I'm going to allow him to have a little extra time for rebuttal in light of that. How much time did we go over?
2 minutes.
Well, let's just say 2 minutes. Okay?
I can't, Your Honor. I apologize.
No problem. Thank you.
Your Honors, this whole process, and I've been at this process for over 50 years, too. When Galder and I, we've got a century in this business. The whole idea is the search for the truth. And I grant you that the court had a very rigid rule. By golly, discovery was ended back there 9 months before. Where did I go to touch that? But the reality of it is I didn't get a case until sometime in the early part of 2015. And while the counsel may have bent over backwards to accommodate Mr. Galder, he certainly didn't bend over backwards to accommodate me. I came in brand new on this thing. I look at this case, and there needed a lot of things needed to be done. And Mr. Galder did what he was supposed to do.
Mr. Friedman, how do we get beyond the abuse of discretion review that we have here on this issue?
I beg your pardon.
How do we say that this was an abuse of discretion by the trial court?
Well, because it was so prejudicial to the plaintiff. The damage that was done to the defendant was minuscule. Mr. Laughlin is one of the best lawyers in this state. He could have cross-examined Dr. Vinton blindfolded. The reality of it is that he kept out a major portion of the damages to Mr. Putnam. I think that's a very important thing. And he also kept out a lot of other things, too. But these were things that would have gone in normally. And it was just because of a skid in the road. And Mr. Galder did bring in what he was supposed to do. This court's held, and it's just a basic rule, that when you've got a problem with a case, you don't hurt your client. You bring in somebody else. And that's what Paul tried to do.
Mr. Friedman, is the skid in the road that you're referring to the absence of a stipulation between the parties that the medical bills were fair and reasonable?
Well, that's one of them, Your Honor. But the fact is that Paul got sick. And he had heart problems, and I think that probably had, there's nothing in the record of this, but I guess he had some problems, and it affected his ability to function properly. He admits that. And if you read some of the transcripts there, he basically falls on his sword. He does just about whatever he could do. I think I'm over my time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Both of you. The matter is submitted.